This is The Film Effect with Tiff.
We sit in the house and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel belt and radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Film Effect with Tiff. I am back for another episode to talk about movies, feelings, to vent, to rant, whatever you need to know. I'm just going to tell you. And I have an awesome guest who has returned. His name is BL. BL.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Thank you for coming back. And So I had you on before and we talked about one of your picks, which is Repo Man. And I was, you know, I've been reaching out to people for episodes and just to, like, you know, see what people want to discuss. And I've had some interesting movie picks. Now, you picked this movie, Network, from 1976. And dude, I have to tell you, I have not seen this movie, which is like, I felt like a little bit like like a bad student almost, you know? I was like, how could you have not seen this movie? But I did see the movie, like, you know, 2 days ago. Uh-huh. And my wife actually wanted me to thank you because she usually doesn't like to watch movies that are like a little bit older. If she hasn't, like, if it wasn't a part of her viewing experience as a young person, it's kind of like, if it's beyond a certain date, she's like, I want to watch a movie from the '70s. And I was like, no, but you have to see Network. Like, this is right up your alley. You're such a news person. She's like a big news person. And so we watched it and she was really, really into it. And so I'll let you just go ahead and you can reintroduce yourself, any plugs you want to make, and then we'll get into the movie.
Yeah. After Network, I'll plug the Ocean City Film Festival because a lot of cool updates there. But it's funny that you mention this movie, feeling like a bad student, not having seen this movie, because the first time I saw this movie actually was when I was at Towson University as a student in my first ever screenwriting class. I had this professor, I couldn't stand him. I hated him so much. He was just this like really old fashioned guy. He talked down to women and he just had a horrible sense of humor. He was a creep and I still am disgusted by his existence. But of course, you know, years of experience, professional guy in the industry, blah, 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 blah. you know, the American story.
Right.
Anyways, last day of class, he's like, okay, I'm going to show you guys this movie that you probably wouldn't see anywhere else if it wasn't for me making you watch it in this class. So I watched it and I didn't really think too much of it. I just left the class being like, wow, that professor's such an asshole. And this movie really explains, like, it feeds him. I don't like that. And then I don't remember when. I don't know. It must have been like after I had seen Mad Men, I really wanted to rewatch Mad Men. It's like, okay, what's the next best thing? It's like, well, there's this movie. And then I remembered that a favorite movie of mine, UHF, which I'm always going to mention, is sort of a parody of Network in a lot of ways. Like, that's the main movie it parodies. So I rewatched it and I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. And I watched it again recently and again and decided that we should definitely talk about it because it's such a powerful film.
It is a powerful film. And yeah. I actually found it to be quite fitting for what we're experiencing right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Which was so interesting to me. I just really could not believe how timely it was in a sense.
Exactly.
And it is a bit of a satire. You know, what's weird is I didn't, like I said, we all have kind of heard of this film. At least I have. And then there's the quotes from the movie that a lot of people have heard before. At least I did. Which is, you know, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And I just thought, how funny is this movie? Especially, like, you know, that idea. And then just the idea of, like, that speech that he gives at the table. And I'm now jumping, you know, at the news desk, which I'm kind of jumping ahead. But So this was your pick and you just explained a little bit why. What do you think about watching this movie now?
I don't know. It's so wild to me because I mean, watching it now makes me feel like the story is just timeless in and of itself.
Right.
Like, to think that at one point in American history, like, this was a fantasy, you know? And now it's like, there's probably a lot of shows and a lot of people on the internet that, like, make a career out of just screaming shit with no real substance. Granted, I mean, Howard was a troubled man and he had some kind of philosophy, but, you know, it was just being capitalized on. The network didn't care. They're just like, hey, let's put this guy on air because people will watch him, whatever. That's, in my opinion, basically how Trump became president. So it was so interesting to see that be a fantasy at one point.
Yeah, and it is a satire or like a dark comedy. You don't know it right away. That's the interesting about this movie. So what I'm going to do, what I always do for my lovely viewers, you guys might be viewing this actually, because I am doing this through a Zoom call, this episode, and I will post it. I will post it with all of my pajama situation on and everything, possibly, BL, if you give me permission here. But this movie, listen, is anyone putting on clothes anymore? Like, what is even happening out
there?
I only
do it for Zoom calls, you know?
Just no pants, right? Is that the idea? You just got to put on something appropriate on the top.
That's exactly it. Even when I was walking my dog a few minutes ago.
Good for you. All right. So this movie, it's Network. It's 1976, directed by Sidney Lumet. Writer Patty. Oh, boy. Look at her last name. Chayefsky. Is that sound correct?
Yeah, Chayefsky.
Okay. And amazing people in this movie. Faye Dunaway, William Holden, Peter Finch. And I was watching it and noticing a lot of other faces from things I'd seen that when I was young, and I couldn't like even pinpoint who they were, but I was like, I know that face, which was really interesting to see those people, like Conchetta Farrell. She's definitely been in things that I recognized her, and there's other people too. But so the setup of this movie is, you know, we're following a news show on a network. The description that IMDb gives in a very brief sentence is, a television network cynically exploits a deranged former anchor's ravings and revelations about the news media for its own profit. And I'll just get right into it. You know, right away, all I could think of is the real true story of the woman who shot herself on the actual news, if you know what I'm talking about. And her name, I forget exactly what her name was, but they made a movie about her. Do you know who I'm talking about? It was like Christine.
I know the story. I don't know the name. Didn't know there was a movie either.
What was it?
I didn't know it was a movie. They made a movie about it.
They made a movie about it, actually. And I wanted to see it a few years ago. I didn't actually, it was like an indie movie and I don't think it did very well, but there is a story, and look at me, I don't even have my information up here. but I know that there was, that actually happened. And that is what I was wondering if they had pulled that from, you know, the real world media, and then decided to build a story around this concept of someone who kind of like gets disillusioned or, you know, goes crazy or whatever you want to call it, and then decides that it's time to just like end their life on TV, or the concept of that. Did you know about that at all?
If I do know about it, it's because I just found it through like going on the internet and clicking link after link, just finding interesting things.
right.
But no, okay, I don't think I ever read the whole story.
Yeah. So anyway, there's been a couple things about that. Her name was Christine Chubbuck, and she was a news reporter for a small television station in Florida, and she did commit suicide on live television. And it's crazy. Like, who does that? You know, they didn't know she was going to do it. She just did it in the moment. In this movie, he says he's going to come back and do it on TV like next week or something. Yeah. He's like, I'm going to come back on and I'm going to blow my brains out. And that's when this whole thing really, you know, starts. So I don't know. What are your thoughts about that?
I don't know. I mean, now I'm desperate to like find Christine's story, because that's so interesting. and Morbid. When was that even? Is that in the past?
That happened. Like, it actually happened. She did it in 1974.
So, oh, okay.
So there may be some crossover with this story, and or maybe not inspiration, but something that the idea came from this concept of this woman who was so fed up with trying to do real news. I know when I saw this documentary about her, this whole story, that she was really trying hard to do real news, and she was getting really frustrated with her role and her career. And it wasn't like she had a big job yet in the news, you know, in television news yet, but she was really trying in her own mind to like do something more real and bring real stories. And she was not really having the space to do that. And I think combined with some depression and some other things that were going on with her mentally, it just broke her. And it, you know, and I'm telling you, there is a movie, I think it's called Christine. Now I'm just talking about a whole other movie, but I don't know who played her, but it was about that whole situation. But in this movie, you know, we've got our main character, and his name is
Howard Beale.
Howard Beale. Why am I like blanking? Good God. So Howard Beale is a news anchor, and he's basically, the setup I remember from just watching this is that he knows he's about to lose his job.
Yeah,
like the ratings.
Yeah.
Go ahead. If you
his share goes down, the ratings are low, and like he's aging. So basically all these things come together, and then he finds out he's actually going to lose his job. And that's what really sends him over. The fact that I'm just like so amazed by that scene where like once he gets on back on the air after having his revelation, like, yep, screw it, I'm gonna kill myself. He just starts delivering his news. No one in the newsroom's reacting. They tuned it out because they just don't care, which is hilarious. And having worked in news, I know for a fact that wouldn't happen because, like, I mean, when I was a news photographer and like the news hour was happening, everyone was watching it so intently. So granted, it was small market. I don't know how things work, but it was so funny. That's such an iconic scene. And I always love it in movies when like when shit's going down and then the phones start ringing all over the place. All the producers are like, what's going on? What's he saying? Then the next day it's like, oh, we actually had a lot of people watch. And then, you know, the whole movie sort of snowballs into that. I feel like, though, in real life, if someone were to do that and they got their spinoff, I mean, how successful are spinoffs really?
Yeah. You know, I think the whole movie, even from the get-go, is just commentary on people and what we care about and what we don't. And just like also the rhythm of that kind of business, which is just TV, news, networks. And it may be obviously a comment on the times of where they thought we were going in that area. But you're right. That was the best part right away is when he kind of says these crazy things and nobody in the room is paying any attention. And that was one of, go ahead.
Oh, I just, once he starts, like before we did this podcast, I watched this awesome video essay about the film. And, you know, when he gets his show, they call him the Mad Prophet. And in this essay, I was just watching, someone called the film itself prophetic of like modern entertainment, which I thought was totally awesome. I love how films can sort of, I don't know, they act as MacGuffins in that sort of weird way. You know what I mean?
I'm telling you, it's eerie how like prophetic it is. I mean, we were watching it and I was actually rewatching that, just that one speech that he gives, not that first one, but the one where he comes in the middle of the night in the rain with his pajamas and his coat over top. That's like the famous line. But that whole speech he gives in that moment is so weird because you could right now hear that speech and almost think that he's talking about today. Literally,
exactly.
Everything he says, he's talking about the Russians. He's talking about like us having too much, like we're all in our places. We're all like wrapped up in TV and like we aren't, you know, all the thing. I mean, it's just such a crazy concept that was somebody thought of that in 1976. And now here we are and it feels like it's today.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you feel like that? And I just think, and then you're right. And then it gets, you know, and then Faye Dunaway, who is such a strong, oh my God, she's insane in this movie. Like she really is.
I love when she gets that alone time with Max in his office, and she's pitching all these crazy stories, and absolutely every main character that she describes is like a crusty middle-aged man.
By the way, he's not middle-aged.
No, he's not. I like cracked up when he was like, here I am, middle-aged man, talking to a young woman. I was like, bullshit, dude.
I know, and she kept calling him a middle-aged man, and I was like, this guy is so old. There's nothing middle-aged about him. I'm like, why is this happening over and over again? But
times change.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're already involved in talking about this. I haven't really let you. Do you want to talk about the OC Film Fest or what you guys are doing right now? You know, one thing that's been on, I'm kind of all over the place today, but I did want to talk about, you know, the predicament we're in with this quarantine, which is kind of a little sad for me, but, you know, movie theaters are closed. Going to see movies in public is, I don't know when that's ever going to happen again. And I'm seriously bummed out, you know, like the thought of that and not knowing when that's going to happen again is a little bit crazy. And I know that's affected what you guys are trying to do on some level, even though you're not currently, you know, go ahead.
Well, on top of like the theaters being closed, like the crazier thing to me is that even the movies themselves are no longer being made. So imagine the catch up that's going to have to happen in a couple months where there's no new movies coming out. Like what the hell is going to happen? Movie theaters can open. Sure. I get, are we going to watch like Trolls World Tour, whatever the hell is playing right now? It's crazy.
That's such a crazy thing to think about. Yeah, you're right. I mean, look at all the TV shows that are doing Zoom, you know, episodes now.
But I'm sure like, you know, post-production jobs are fine. It's just something to think about. I can only imagine the explosion of new media that will hopefully happen. I mean, who knows what kind of, who knows what will happen to like content developers. But yeah, for the Ocean City Film Festival, we've been doing weekly live streams every Friday night at 7 p.m. at the Ocean City Film Festival Facebook page, where we've been showing week after week our award-winning films from the 2020 season. So last week, we showed a dramatic short called Insomnia Nights, and this week, we're actually showing Table by the Window by Rob Waters.
Oh, I know that. Yeah, that's awesome. That's
an instant classic. He won Best Comedy for the 2020 festival. So
that's really cool.
It's been really interesting, like doing this live stream thing, because I am totally unfamiliar with live streaming. I just know it's a thing that gamers do and stuff like that. So for the Ocean City Film Festival, every Friday, 7 p.m., when we show our movies, like how I do it personally, is really funny, really convoluted. We do it through Facebook Live. So my internet in my apartment is absolutely horrible. And for my job, I have to use remote desktop to access my work computer in my office all the way up at Towson University. And that is the most powerful computer I've ever used in my entire life. So I do all the live streams from that computer, but remotely from my laptop. And it's been pretty successful so far, knock on wood. But it's tough because, I mean, viewership, that is, we've had... It always dips into the single digits on Friday nights, but when we had our actual monthly film night, which we did virtually, and our monthly film nights are the film nights we do on the third Saturday of each month, we had like about 50 people tune in, which was awesome. And we had the directors record themselves giving like personalized messages, intros to the films, and it was totally cool. So now we're still trying to get everything organized for the May film night. We are tentatively planning on showing Reggie's Forest by Dave Messick, which was an absolute hit for the 2020 Ocean City Film Festival. Are you familiar with this film?
I'm not. I need to like get on top of it. Yeah, I have to start. Yeah, so I'm with you in like I'm listening as like I need to do this myself now and watch these shorts. Is it a short, right, or is it a full?
No,
feature?
No. This is a feature length film.
Oh, this is a feature. Okay.
Yeah, this film is like. It's huge, in my opinion, at least. Basically, so Dave Messick is a local filmmaker. He has a whole production studio in West Ocean City. It's phenomenal. Like, you can't believe that someone has this kind of property on the Lower Eastern Shore of Delmarva.
Wow, like, it's so cool.
Basically just a studio that he built in, I don't even know how you describe the space, but anyway, it's awesome. And he does a TV show called Hooked on OC, and he does a bunch of other stuff. He's just constantly making, like, media in the area. And for the past 10 years or so, he's been going to a place called Mariner's Country Down to get nature footage. Have you ever heard of Mariner's Country Down?
No.
Okay, I never heard of it. No. But it's this huge piece of property off Cinepuxent Road in Worcester County. And it's this beautifully preserved forest. I've never been there. I've only seen it in the movies. This beautifully preserved forest. And the guy who owns the property is a legendary Eastern shoreman named Reggie Mariner. He's mm-hmm. an older guy, and he's very known in the area because his property, called Mariner's Country Down, he used to have it open. There was like an antique store or something. I might be wrong there. But people would just come and visit and walk around. It was just a beautiful place. And inside of this forest that is Mariner's Country Down, he built, like I said, there are shops there. He built sort of colonial style houses. Like he would travel to places like Williamsburg, take notes on the architecture, come home, build it himself. Wow. And unfortunately, maybe like 20 years ago, the county had to shut the place down because, you know, he wasn't getting the right paperwork in. He's a good old boy. He's a shore billy.
He's a shore billy. I don't know if I've heard that word.
Yeah, he's shore billy from here, whatever you want to call him. So he wasn't really concerned with, you know, getting the permits and everything. He just saw something. He wanted to build it. He wasn't really trying to expand a big business or anything. He was just doing what he felt like he wanted to do, which was just build some unique buildings, take care of this forest. And anyways, Dave Messick would go to this place for nature footage and he would meet Reggie Mariner. So one day Reggie was like, why don't you come on down to my village, whatever it is, and I'll let you get some shots. And he starts talking to Reggie. And Reggie is such a character that Dave decided to tell his story and sort of, you know, explore not only Reggie's life, but the story of this crazy property that, much like Dave's studio, you wouldn't believe exists in Worcester County. So this movie brought out so many people to the 2020 festival. It was ridiculous. The first night, like last minute, we had to open a second auditorium in the flagship theater, which was a logistical nightmare. I mean, all the nightmare happened behind the scenes. Like everyone, they didn't know any better, but like everyone was going crazy. And oh, Dave, like the day before the festival, the night, he was like, he hadn't showered in days. He was just all crusty and exhausted. I had an arrangement with him where he pretty much had an extension because I met Dave through the Art League, through the film festival. And for years, he's been like, yeah, I've been working on this movie, I'm like, oh, great, let's finally put it in the festival. And I really wrote him to make sure the film was completed for the festival. So we sold out two theaters Thursday night. We showed it again Saturday. Saturday, we had planned ahead of time to have it in two theaters, so no worries there. Sunday, another encore, we had to show it in two theaters, which was another last-minute decision, and it was just such a nightmare. But as far as the audience was concerned, we planned for this. But this kind of thing goes to show how awesome the festival team is, as well as the venue organizers that we worked with, all the theater personnel that were really there to save our ass, for lack of a better way to put it. So anyways, yeah, the film was a hit. And you should definitely make Dave's acquaintance at some point because, I mean, he'll tell you all sorts of crazy stories. And the actual movie, I mean, Reggie Mariner is such a character. And I never heard of him, never met him. But when I told people like, yeah, we're going to be showing this movie this year, they're like, oh, Reggie, have you ever met him? And I don't know how else to describe him other than the quintessential Eastern shoreman.
Right. There's a lot of those around here, I'm sure. Yeah.
If you do make this into a video, you ought to show the trailer for this.
Maybe I will. We can even just post it on the, I'll post it on the Film Effect Facebook page.
Awesome. Awesome. Even like, you should hunt down Dave at some point. I'm sure he'd be happy to talk about it because I'm not really sure what he's doing with this film. In the near future, there was talks about getting it on public access television, sending it to other festivals. But what makes this film so important to me, especially with the kind of film festival work I do, is, I mean, it's just perfect for the Ocean City Film Festival. It's what we've always wanted. Being able to get this kind of content of this caliber in this area, from this area, that's huge to me. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, listen, who knows right now? People that don't have work. I mean, one thing about creative people is that sometimes we need time to get bored, to get ideas. And if we're adults and we're just, you know, working and we're trying to do things on the side, sometimes that stuff gets put away for a while, or just, you know, you don't get to it because you feel like you don't have the space to do it. And I've heard from some other people that I know that aren't able to really work right now that are kind of like, you know, the pot is brewing and they're just kind of like, ooh, I've got, you know what, maybe I should do that thing that I haven't done for like 2 years, you know, and they start. So listen, filmmakers, if you're local and you want to just get back into it. Maybe you, you know, did this years ago and you haven't touched a camera and haven't thought of like actually writing a script, or I don't know, but you know what? Get out your ideas, get out your paper, get out your computer, make a short, do something. And, you know, and BL's got, we've got avenues around here for people to show their work. So I think that this is a great, great topic to discuss that too. And, but it's awesome. And I do need to get myself, you know, I didn't get to go to your festival because I wasn't here, but I'm really looking forward to going next year. And
yeah, I mean, if season 5 is your first experience at the Ocean City Film Festival, like it's going to be the best experience anyone's had at the film festival. Cause I mean, we're already planning for it. I don't know if you saw on social media, we just got our poster design for season 5 done by the very talented Ian Postley as usual. And it's, I will admit, a little more ominous than I anticipated it would be, because the poster, we like to incorporate some Ocean City landmarks. At least that's what we're trying to do now. It used to be just whatever weird image I wanted Ian to produce. But now we have the boardwalk arches from downtown Ocean City. And in the foreground, you see these like figures, these humans, I guess. And their eyes are sort of like glowing and empty. And they're all just kind of walking towards the front. And it's really a callback to our season 1 design. I don't know if you can see it on the wall over there. Those three
figurines. There you go. I do see it.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That was our season 1. So I just told Ian, I told him that I wanted these three humanoids, androgynous, just with these beams coming out of their eyes, like they're showing movies or something. Cause the idea is that, you know, us weirdos are coming to Ocean City and trying to show movies. So we got our new design.
Hey. It's nice.
Thank you. We got our new design.
And we're all, yeah, go ahead. Sorry, I'm interrupting.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. I just want to say it's, we are accepting submissions for 2021 now. So we always try to synchronize our new design with the 2021 call for submissions.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Yeah, everybody do it. Get out there, make a movie. Doesn't matter. Five and minutes, 10 minutes.
Delmarva
Maybe
locals.
I will. Maybe I'll make one. Who knows? Let's see how bored
do.
I get.
Please
yeah.
do.
You
When's
never
the last
know.
Time you made one?
I made a ridiculous trailer for the horror trailer challenge at the Rob's Revival House event. Yeah, that I did in like 2 hours because I didn't have really an idea, and I was like, oh, I'll just do something. But yeah, I mean, maybe I will. When is your deadline again?
Early bird is May 31st, regular August 30th, 31st. I don't remember how many days.
Okay. So I've got about a month. Oh yeah. Okay.
But
we can make that
there's
happen.
A plot twist. We are providing waiver codes to any filmmaker from the Lower Eastern Shore region. They just reach out to us and we give it to them. So after this call, I will tell you.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, all right. Well, listen, let's get back into network. I will also post all this information on the Facebook page and probably somewhere on Instagram. And BL also, if you want to go to the Ocean City Film Festival Facebook page, you can go to their website. You can find out more about all the things that they have going on. And please support local stuff, or even just support independent film. If you're not going to the movies, like maybe, you know, rent some independent movies or just support it, because this is a tough time, but I do think it's an opportunity to expose yourself to some different, stories out there, you know, and they're not all being made by big, you know, productions. Sometimes some of the best movies happen, with no money and no budget and just a few people with an idea. Right. So support the independent. But Network is a big movie, and like we said, big stars, and a movie that is kind of, you know, I guess what I'll ask you is, like, since it does seem to be a bit of a dark comedy or satire, like, so this guy is going to lose his job. He's an older guy. The ratings are bad. He flips out on TV, which you would think would end his whole career. And then because we've got Faye Dunaway, we've got the 70s, we've got a lot of different things happening in that time period. One thing I thought of right away, which is maybe just me reacting to all the things I've seen around the Me Too movement and even just a movie like Bombshell, was I was like surprised to see a woman in such a power position. But I do think maybe that time was the time that women were starting to be seen in more powerful roles, at least in workplace and even in a place like a news network or a network in general, television network. But I thought that was really interesting when you looked at it. Beale's existence, like the news channel itself or that news show, it seemed very heavily managed by men. But then when you transferred over to where she was in programming, she was surrounded by women. And I don't know if that was her choice, but it did seem like there was a difference between the two. What did you notice that at all or no?
To be honest, I didn't really notice that, but I mean, that's a good observation. And in that essay I was watching about the film, it's like she was originally written in just as like a romantic interest. And then it's like, well, let's sort of make her that and somewhat of an antagonist. And mm-hmm. I think it is important that she had like a very powerful position in the film. I mean, I think a lot of it is, you know, she is the next generation of people that will be running shit. And in the unfortunate takeaway in that film is that she's a bad guy. But in like a technical sense, well, it's a woman in power in a film in this era is great. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's
no,
like,
totally. Yeah, totally. Yeah. And actually, like, it's fun. And I'm going to go there because I can. some of the language in this is pretty interesting.
Like when she first meets, what's her name, and they have the exchange, and, you know, the woman calls herself an N-word.
Oh, my God. Yeah, there's stuff with race in this movie. There's obviously a lot going around the political movements of, like, things that were happening. Like, remember Patty Hearst, and I'm, like, going to sound really like I don't know what I'm talking about right now. But not protests, but there were, what would you call that, when they were going in and, like, terrorist acts almost, but by these organizations who were doing this as a way to, you know, cause a stir or get their voice heard. It was a very interesting time. All that stuff was happening. I guess they kind of tie that into the story too, that like what we need is we need to have a lot of controversial things going on. We need to, like, that's what people want. They want to see reality. They want to see, you know, protests. They want to see, like, let's give the people what they want.
She starts hanging out with that crew of rebels. It reminds me of like something you'd see on Vice or something, which is another whole like parallel to like modern day is like pushing the limit on journalism and sending people to interact with like genuinely dangerous organizations.
No, totally. And only in the interest of better ratings and more shares. I mean, that's the whole, it's not even for the sake of supporting those organizations or those ideas or whatever what she's really doing is saying, we need better ratings. We need to be up in the rankings and we need more money. So it's not even, it's also twisted to start, you know? But Faye Dunaway's character is so great. I just said this whole thing about her being a woman, but the interesting part is when she goes to dinner with, who's the other guy? What's his name? Sorry, I have to pull up the cast again. Max? Is it Max? No, it's Peter. Yeah, I think it is Max. William Holden. The middle-aged man. Give me a break. Who's not a middle-aged man at all, by the way. So she goes to dinner with this guy and she's kind of being like coming on to him and she's manipulating the situation. But at one point she even says this very gratuitous statement about sex that basically she's a terrible lay. Do you remember this?
Yeah, I remember that.
And she's kind of like a man. So even though she is a woman, she plays like a guy. Like she's really, really like quick and fast. And I don't know if that's not all men, but she even admits it herself that she's masculine energy, that she's more like a man the way she operates. And she's very aware of what she wants. She's very sure of herself on a lot of levels, mm-hmm. but then I don't know. I mean, at some point she does kind of unravel a bit in this relationship with William Holden's character. What did you think about that?
I love how power hungry she seems. And I think like her unraveling, maybe it's like her acknowledging that like her relationship with him is like the only proof she needed that she wasn't, you know, like a sociopath or something.
Right. Cause she doesn't care about much, right?
Yeah.
And no.
If there's one thing that annoys me about Max in the film is just like, I hate it when, granted, it was part of his character and I get it. It just annoys me when people narrate their life, like they're in a book or something and he starts referring, it's like, now we're in the final act where I leave you, blah, blah, blah. And it's,
I don't know what was going on with that. This movie was weird because it goes from like these serious moments to kind of these moments of ridiculous, like, over the top, you know, scenes with him ranting and people. I mean, one of my favorite scenes is when he get up out of your seats and, you know, go to the window, you know, and people go to the window and they're all screaming out the window, which is just so fitting for what I feel like right now is I just want to open my window and scream.
Like when that scene came on, when I was watching it last week, I wanted to do that myself, but then it's like, well, how many people have actually seen this movie these days? People would actually think I'm an idiot. But yeah, no, it is a powerful
scene. That's okay.
Scene.
All the smart people will know what you're doing.
Be like one person across the street opens their window.
Right. No, but so there's scenes like that. And then you're right. Well, as this relationship develops with him and her, God, he's such a douche. I'm sorry. Like all of it that he's like somehow that scene with him and his wife is unbelievable. God, to me. What did you think of that?
Well,
like,
she should have slapped him. He should have shut up and just, I don't know. God. That was messy.
She goes from being really upset. And then like within a split second, they kind of like have an interesting jokey moment where she's kind of like, well, I guess you're going to have to feel the burn. Like whatever's going to happen to you, you're really in for it after crying in hysteria. So there's some like, and I didn't
maybe
know that
it's
was-
it's one of those things where it's like sometimes there are just these little moments where you instantly tell a movie was written by a man.
But it says it's written by a woman. Is that a woman? Hold on. Who wrote this movie? I just said
Chayefsky.
Is it
I'm
Patty?
Pretty sure.
Is that a guy? You're right. Wait a second.
Yeah, we got
it. Yeah, his name is Patty with a DD. I'm so sorry, Patty. That's just
fine.
A strange name. Yeah,
he can afford to be misgendered.
Right. Yeah, well, of course, he's the victim, you know, of course. But for him to write that character that way. But they did have these kind of bizarre scenes, like you said, where he's just, you know, speaking in this kind of like poetic way about the whole thing. And I don't know if that was just a throwback to old movies and like how people talk in old. I mean, it did have that vibe to me of like when you see these older films like Bogart and, you know,
it's always a guy in a suit pacing around just talking.
Yeah, this crazy woman, like she's made my life insane. I'm like, you chose this crazy woman, what's your problem? You know, you just left your wife for 20 million years and, you know, whatever. But maybe I should get away from that point of the story. It just kind of blew my mind. Yeah.
What is your favorite scene of the film?
Ooh, now you're interviewing me. That's a really tough one. I mean, I really did enjoy the people screaming out the windows. I mean, that's pretty typical that I would like that scene in the movie. I have to really think about this. I really enjoy like the moment I just told you about. I like I like scenes where there's really just good act, like the acting just happens and you're watching people interact with each other.
That's what made film school so hard for me, because every time we had to watch a clip to analyze it, I would just get engrossed in it, even if it was a bad movie, because as we probably discussed in our last interview, I'm sort of broken like that as a movie watcher.
Yeah, are you? Yeah, so what do you mean by that?
Oh, nothing. I just really get immersed in movies. That's why I really like bad movies, because even if I see a terrible performance, it's like, well, I'm watching a movie, you know?
Right,
I force
right.
myself to believe it.
No, and that scene's really interesting. Another really bizarre scene that I could not really wrap my head around totally was when they pull him in and he's got to speak to
the president of the network.
Yes.
That's my favorite scene.
Yes, that is a great scene. And he's at the end of this long table, right? The visual itself. Oh, that
beautiful
itself.
Shot where he's just, you know.
And he's ranting and raving at him. And I'm thinking, like, is that to, like, get this guy to listen to him, to be at his level? Or is he really genuine in that moment? And I really, it didn't really matter, but I did think, what is that about? That this guy is you know, privately trying to match this guy's energy by just speaking to him through his own way of speaking.
But I think that's what he does, and it works, because, like, before, his demeanor definitely changes. He's like, Howard, I'm going to speak to you in a way I think you'll understand. And
right.
Then he just, you know, 6 minutes later, it's like, do you get what I'm saying? Totally, totally different persona. And it's just so beautiful to watch. And it was such a great monologue about how the world is a corporation, how money is God. Then Howard really took that to heart and blundered his ratings when he started talking about democracy failing.
Oh my God.
I love that
There's
scene.
So much in it, yeah.
And like that's actually the reason why I revisited the movie after college, because I love Better Call Saul, and there's a scene where Bob Odenkirk's character quotes that, and I'm like, oh, hey, I saw that movie. Maybe I should watch it again. And yeah, I watched it again. I really liked it.
Yeah. No, it's a great, the movie's got so much rich stuff in it. Even though it goes off, it strays in these different directions, and you're kind of like, is that happening or is that not happening? As the movie goes on, it becomes more and more surreal, you know? So now you have, what looked like a normal news situation, and, you know, Faye's character, why do I keep forgetting her name?
Diana.
And she, man, that scene where they present this new show where the whole audience, what do they say? The same, they say, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Yeah. That's like how they open the show. Now it's like David Letterman or something, but you've got like the audience is chanting before the show opens.
Music's and then, blasting and everything.
Yeah. And then it's this weird, you know, turntable studio setting where, you know, it's got the psychic and then you've got the, and I was like, I was actually kind of upset because I wanted to see what they did. I was like, what is that piece? I want to see that. I want to see like the weird psychic woman make her prediction. And then like, but they would do that where sometimes they would show you something, but then not finish it. Did you notice that? Like it didn't even matter.
Yeah, definitely. That reminds me, like, once things really start going off the rails, you see the writers meeting, like they get so far along with, I don't even remember the name of the show with the communists, but you know, they start having writers meetings and these like the actual, I guess, communists are actually getting upset. Like, hey, I'm going to lose share over this script this week.
Yeah. They're like, I want distribution rights. And it's like, whatever they started as was so, that scene, by the way, is another great scene. We're talking about a scene in the movie where whatever this, this organization is, I have no idea what their name is. It's probably really long and really hard to say, and I need to look that up. But
yeah, I've seen this movie like 5 times, and I still have to.
Come on, BL, help me out, audience. Where are you? Help us out. But anyway, they go from, you know, what their purpose is to, you know, they're so in it. They're so in what they're trying to do, and they're in this like, you know, wherever they're all living, and obviously they've got their kidnapped woman over on the stairs, who is now part of the situation, this terrorist situation. And she's the one that has to come in and remind them of like what they are, you know, because she's like arguing with them. They've got their papers out, you know, they're looking through all these things. They're trying to decide, I get the distribution rights. I don't know, you know, and then she comes in and kind of argues with her. And then they go right back into it. Let's go to page 6, you know. So these people have been bought. That's what I thought. I'm like, look how quickly everyone gets bought. You know, it doesn't even matter what your cause is. Right amount of money and right circumstance, and suddenly you're right there with everyone else. So it does become more comical as it goes on.
Everyone has a price.
Everyone has a price. And this guy, you know, and I kept thinking that too, this poor Beale's character who just gets weirder and weirder. No one seems to care about him at all. Like if he's okay, like what is happening to this guy? Like he's just losing it more and more, you know?
Exactly.
And course, yeah. And then of course he becomes a wild card to the point of really being a problem.
How'd you like the ending?
The ending is so good. The ending is so good. And another movie I'm going to bring up in relation to this movie in terms of like currently is like not to, and I don't know if you'll hate me thinking this or not, but it did remind me of The Joker, or Joker, not The Joker.
Yeah.
Joker. And then also of the movie that movie being compared to King of Comedy. But the idea of people, you know, with mental health issues wanting to kill themselves on television or murdering someone on live television. I don't know. It just made me think of that as well.
And yeah. It reminds me of Nightcrawler too, in a weird sort of way.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's weird too. So I don't know what the, in terms of the movie, if you're making it one big comment on society or on the media, I don't know. What do you think the ending? So, you know, obviously we've ruined movies on this podcast for you. If you haven't seen the movie, go see it. But they basically just at the end, they don't know what to do with him anymore. He's not useful. He's kind of like, he's too risky, and they just decide they've got to get rid of him. And they have that conversation in the room, which is awesome, by the way. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I mean, you just have to murder him. Don't you? I'm like, what is happening?
And in the trend of the movie, I mean, they can only escalate things to keep people watching. If he's on the decline, well, how do you boost him up from where he is? They want something outrageous, and that's proven. So it's like, well, what if he actually did die? And I personally love it in movies when the main character dies. I mean, it's one of my favorite things. It always excites me. And yeah, I think it worked. And I think the big takeaway is just whatever feeds the machine has to, you know, he has to deliver.
Yeah.
They need the ratings. Mm-hmm. It's just going to keep growing and growing, and there's nothing really anyone can do about it, and we're all going to suffer and be cynical. That's basically what happened to some extent. So,
yeah, it's a great movie, and it makes you think a lot. What other things did you want to bring up in terms of talking about this film? Any thoughts?
It's just so cool, and I think it's one of the films that, like, I hate writing. I like never ever write. It's so tedious and annoying to me, but watching this film makes me want to write just because it's so beautifully done. And there are a few movies, I think, where from start to finish, like, it feels like a book is opened then closed. There are no loose ends. I'm left totally satisfied.
And right.
That's what I am with this movie. So yeah, I didn't expect to like it considering the first time I saw it, but like you have discussed on this podcast before, people view movies differently with age and with their life experiences. So that's the exciting thing about art. But I think this movie is essential viewing for just Americans and anyone else with access to media.
Well, and like I said, it rings true now, and even in a way that's even more profound, because you're looking at what was then. And I think sometimes we like to think as the current state that we're in is so unique. Like we're always like, so it's like, every generation is so egotistical, you know, it's like, we're the only ones that have done this. You know, this is my burden of my generation.
Exactly.
And it's like, yeah, okay, get over yourself. And that's why like old people are probably always sitting around behind us in restaurants, just like rolling their eyes and being like, yeah, this has happened before. Like, you know, nobody's fucking different. We're all human and we all go through the same bullshit. And like, this is an example of a storyline built around that idea to me, which is like, we all, I don't know, especially media, because even though things have changed so dramatically, because now we have so many types of media, it's not just television, it's not just live television, you know, there's so many things you can tap into, but it does seem like the problems are the same around it, which is just the way we respond to it, the way we interact with media, the way we interact with news, and what it has kind of done to society in a way is interesting. And I think this movie was trying to comment on that. And
definitely.
I actually, just because now as you were talking, I was thinking, like, I love that there's always this interesting trivia on IMDb that I love to just like look at. One thing I just saw on here is that the only music heard in the film comes from commercials and television show themes, which I didn't realize that. But I guess that's how they did the music, which is really interesting. This is an artsy movie. It really is. Like,
yeah, definitely.
It really is different. And one more little bit of trivia. Faye Dunaway would later say that this was the only film I ever did that you didn't touch the script because it was almost as if it were written in verse.
I can believe that.
It's just, there's just such great, there's great stuff in it. And the fact that it can still provoke so many questions, I think, is what makes it so good. Let's see, what does this say? According to Sid Lumet, the Mad as Hell speech was filmed in 1.5 takes. Midway through the second take, Peter Finch abruptly stopped in exhaustion. Lumet was unaware of Finch's failing heart at the time, but in any case did not ask for a third take. What's in the completed film is the second take for the first half of the speech and the second half from the first take. But this movie won Academy Awards. If you guys didn't know that, I think it won
a lot of awards.
It did. It did. It won 4 Oscars, another 16 wins and 26 nominations. Holy moly. But this did get best actor, best actress in a leading role, best actress in a supporting role, and best writing. So it's a movie you got to see, everybody. I really do think, I'm so glad I saw it. And I, like I said, I still can't believe that I hadn't seen it. It's crazy that I hadn't seen this movie. What is wrong with me? God, my head is still spinning around it a little bit. It's a classic.
But that just reminds me, I mean, it got me thinking, I wonder how many movies I'm going to see in the submission pile for the Ocean City Film Festival about quarantine. I wonder how many filmmakers are going to capitalize on this story.
You may have to just have a category alone that's just 2020
I might actually
quarantine.
Do that just to see what happens. I mean, I'm certain we'll get a lot. I mean, I keep seeing on social media filmmakers that like I'm friends with are doing like small little projects, like here's a little experimental film and stuff like that. And you know, if you're making a film about quarantine, it's basically minimal production resources you need. Just maybe just one person, one location. It's so easy. And I hope people take advantage of it. And I hope I don't see the same movie a million times about it.
No, I know. It does make me think like what kind of movie could be made about this, considering
like The Lighthouse in real life.
Oh my God. That movie is so crazy. That's a whole other podcast. Holy shit. I didn't even get into that movie, but I saw that in the theater and I was like, wow, that was intense. No, but this is, you know, talking about the times that we're in. I don't know. I don't know what media, the role, how it's playing out with this whole situation. I guess we'll have to see, you know?
I'm just very thankful that news is no longer my full-time job. I would lose my mind.
I don't even know how they're doing it, to be honest. I mean, like, it's... I don't know, but...
Well, my wife is just, she's releasing a book in June, and she just did an interview for news. The whole thing was Zoom, so she and her co-author were both called on a video, and even the news package, in the end, it was cut as, like, a Zoom call. It was very interesting to see.
That is weird. I mean, this is, I think if we're going to remember certain things about this time, it's going to be Zoom calls. Mm-hmm. Everything Zoom. Yeah. And just, I don't know, a lot of different things. So, but there's a lot of creative things going on. This movie was such a joy. I don't think I may have to watch it again sometime soon. And it's definitely making me think about other movies that, you know, that I haven't thought about from a long time ago. I've definitely been returning to some older films.
Take in for like 2 hours. I think that's how long it is.
No, it's long and it's slow. One thing I've been noticing is I love, and I've said this on my last episode, I love the pace of older films. I like that they're not rushing you through it.
Well, you know, something very interesting that I discovered recently on Prime Video, they're re-releasing a lot of old, like black and white films in color. Like I recently watched House on Haunted Hill in color. And I mean, to me, it doesn't really make much of a difference. I'm sure there are hardcore cinephiles who are like, that is the most ungodly thing you can do to a movie. But it was actually pretty interesting. I mean, looking at the set and all, and I don't know if they just came up with the colors out of their ass or what, but it's interesting. They did it. I watched Carnival of Souls in color also. And I love that movie. That's a good one. Yeah.
I don't know. That's interesting. I don't know why they would be doing that, but there's got to be a reason. Maybe
yeah,
they're
just
trying to appeal to a younger audience.
A fun little life Easter egg. And those movies are technically public domain. I don't know how that works. Even Night of the Living Dead's public domain. But yeah, that might be part of it. That's someone so somewhere is just taking advantage of that.
Night of the Living Dead is definitely one to discuss, everyone. The movie is so much more than what it appears.
Oh, yes, it's perfect.
Isn't it? It is. And it's actually another good one for, I feel like people have been like, all you want to do is horror movies. But like, that's not true. I think that this is not a horror movie. So thank you. I didn't bring up another scary movie.
Of course.
Maybe I am attracted to movies around whatever reminds me of like what I'm experiencing right now. That could be the case. Night of the Living Dead has the feel of an a pandemic.
It's
a zombie movie. So it's the same kind of thing. And it taps into all those things of like race issues and so much. There's so much going on in that movie. Well, I don't know if I have anything else to say. I wish I had questions from people, but the live feed, I was trying to do an Instagram live, but I don't think maybe this time of the day isn't good for people. They're out enjoying this beautiful weather, I'm sure. Well, anyway, it was really awesome, BL, to have you back on. And
it's always fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will definitely be posting that. So please check out with the Film Festival website, the Facebook page, and the live viewing that they're doing. I think that's really cool that you guys are doing that. And support independent movies, guys. And go out and make your own goddamn movies, please. I want to see. Definitely. I don't even care. What would you like watch any? Like, do you guys pretty much. I shouldn't ask this. I guess this is a loaded question. Do you take every film that's submitted, or do you guys actually pick and choose?
Like, no, we don't take every film. I have a committee of jurors, one of which is myself, that screens all the movies for the actual annual event. Whereas every month I generally hand pick whatever I want to show. And a lot of it is when it's not festival season for us, I usually get a handful of local short films to show. And I love doing that because I am so in love with the community we've built of local filmmakers. And it just makes me so happy to see stories being told in the places that we all know and these crazy, unique ways of people with less resources than other filmmakers like West of the Chesapeake, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah.
That's why.
About experimental. Yeah. I love the idea of like, I wonder if anybody would watch a film where it's literally just like one shot. It's just like a static camera shot and just like everything just happens in this one frame and maybe not even that much happens. Like, just something really out of the box is interesting to me.
Nathan Fielder did something like that on his show. If you're familiar with Nathan For You.
No.
He recorded on like a security cam, just a bar for like 2 hours. He took that security footage. Then he hired actors to recreate that footage.
Wow.
He didn't recreate the footage. I mean, he did, but he didn't make a movie out of it. Technically, he did for his show, but he actually turned it into a theater where you could come watch these people pretend to be people in this bar where these people actually did these things. And he even recast the owner. It was hilarious. And it was more of a social experiment than anything. But
yeah. Well, I mean, listen, everyone's got ideas and I think we should all embrace them right now. It's a good time to be creative. Funnel that madness, you know, channel your inner Howard Beale and just be crazy, dude. Put your pajamas on, go run outside, scream at the windows. I don't know. Whatever it takes. Just do what you need to do. Well, thanks again, BL. It's really awesome to have you on. And everybody join us next time and we'll have some new movies and new discussions for you. COVID conversations on the Film Effect. Thanks, guys.
We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.